Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome to the Howard Eskin podcast. This thing's probably available in so many places, but I know it's available on iTunes, as you probably know if you're listening to me right now. I always enjoy it, and I just want to let you know, for all the people that criticized Joe Banner when he was with the Eagles, he's a very, very insightful guy. He's much, much smarter than people give him credit for, whether it's personnel. He really does know personnel, but he really does know the business of football and all those things. And now he can look at it, because he's semi-retired, look at it from a different perspective. Talking to Joe Banner, you will be absolutely fascinated at some of the things he says about, and it's coming up in seconds, some of the things he says about Doug Peterson, about Mike Lombardi, who has just made himself look like a total ass when he won't bend on, well, Doug Peterson was the least qualified head coach, at least qualified to be a head coach in the NFL in his 30 years in football. What an asinine, stupid statement. And I, at times, respected a lot of things that Mike said, but that was just foolish and stupid. So, Joe, we will talk about that. And the level that he thinks that Carson Wentz can go will really make Philadelphia Eagles fans happy. And where he thinks everybody's thinking the same thing, where they could go this year. All right, here's Joe Banner. I'm with a name of a guy who people in Philadelphia have known for years, even though he's not with the Eagles anymore for years. And that would be Joe Banner, the former president of the Eagles, and has done many other things. And Joe, life is different not being with a football team, I would imagine.
I have nerves that aren't frayed. I have free time. Listen, there are elements about it that I really miss. I mean, the excitement of it is unmatched, and really almost anything else you can do with your life. You know, we love being in Philadelphia. Obviously, we had some years that were a lot of fun, some years that were frustrating. But to be honest, at some point, the challenges of it and the stress of it for me became more than the pleasure. And so I'm in a semi-retired, enjoyed state of playing at this point.
But you do miss it. Yeah. I mean, the action of football, especially in Philadelphia, the action of football is just unbelievable. Obviously, this year it's different. But even in good years, not great years, you got to miss the action a little bit.
Well, you absolutely miss the intensity, but realize the intensity is a two-edged sword. I mean, I was a very, you know, intense person, so I enjoyed the intensity. I was stimulated by it. I'd be bored if I didn't have something to do that was that intense. You know, but at some point, you know, so is the wear and tear and the stress and the intensity of the schedule, which, you know, went from being, you know, 9 months to 10 months to 11 and a half months, you know, of the year. You know, I certainly miss what they're doing now. I mean, the years we had great years, the energy in the city, the enthusiasm, the just the passion people had. I mean, you can't imagine being on the other side of that when you're working for the team. What's that like? So you miss that. But, you know, listen, the nature of the business is such that that isn't something that, you know, you're going to have every year, unless, and maybe they have this now, you just have one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the league, in which case you're in that mode, you know, indefinitely.
Joe, when you were at the Eagles, obviously, it happened quickly once Andy Reid came. You got to the playoffs. You finally got to the Super Bowl. But now it just, this team is just so incredible, and I know you watch them and you know what's going on. What is there any similarities between the buildup of that team when Andy Reid was coaching to the buildup now in Doug Peterson's second year?
Well, I think there's a lot of very intentional similarities. I mean, if you look at how the team is built, You know, it's about quarterback and dominating lines of scrimmage and then building from there. It's a lot of high character players that are really driven to win and highly competitive. It's hardworking guys. It's built on having an outstanding coaching staff, you know, top to bottom. I mean, I thought Doug put together one of the best staffs I've seen in a while, certainly the best staff the year that he was hired. You know, so there's a lot of roots. I mean, they've gone to the, you know, signing players early and trying to trade off some guarantees for maybe a little bit more modest guarantee. You know, they've maintained a philosophy of trying to accumulate as many draft picks as possible, yet trading up occasionally if that fit the circumstance, or they had somebody they felt so strongly about. So, you know, all the names change, and obviously there's nuances as the name changes and how things are done. But kind of the root beliefs, the roots of things that drove the decisions we made, I think are very, very similar. I think that's good. I think we weren't creating a revolution. A lot of what we were doing was studying success and adding some of our own wrinkles and replicating it. And I think they're back in a very similar mode to the things that we found generally successful teams did, and then adding a little bit of their own flavor.
When early in Andy Reid's coaching career, he had the opportunity to draft a quarterback. And it's just so obvious what a quarterback means. Your decision then, obviously, is similar to the decision the Eagles made to trade up to get Carson Wentz. What were you thinking when you drafted Donovan McNabb, and the similarities between what happened then and what the Eagles did now with Wentz?
Well, first, it starts with this philosophy I'm mentioning. People were Ricky Waters, and, you know, as people know now, we actually had a higher grade on Edgerrin James and Ricky Waters than we were going to go to running back. It was never a serious conversation in the building. And we had five quarterbacks in that draft. We spent an incredible amount of time researching them, debating them, watching film. And frankly, we had a lot of differences of opinion as to who was the top guy. But in our mind, and, you know, this is obviously what drove them to move up so aggressively in addition to evaluating Wentz, you know, well and correctly, was that, you know, if you want to perennially, seriously, not kidding yourself, compete to win a Super Bowl, and you should be at least good every single year, the way to do that in the NFL is to get a difference-making, top-quality, high-character quarterback. And, you know, that's exactly what they were thinking. Now, our evaluation was different. We were at pick two. I mean, they had to have a lot of confidence. They had to do a lot of smart things to get all the way from where they were to two. So the evaluation is a whole different process. But the philosophy that drove the pick, the importance of it, was exactly the same.
Yeah, but when you draft a quarterback, isn't it really kind of – you do a lot of, and I understand the background and all the things you do and the research and the studies you do, but isn't it, when you look at history, really a flip of the coin a lot of times to get a quarterback, a good one?
Well, here's how we looked at it, and the first part of this is kind of fact. The success rate of picks in the first round, depending upon exactly how you define it, is about 50%. Surprisingly, as that may be to people who perceive that, you know, if you're not hitting on your first-round picks, you're a bum. There are Hall of Fame general managers that missed on plenty of first-round picks. And the hit rate on the first round, even in the top 10 picks and quarterbacks, is about 50%. So we viewed it as a risk to prioritize only if we got it wrong and then wouldn't admit it. Otherwise, it was just like any other first-round pick with a far greater upside on the opportunity to make a difference for the team for a really, really long time. So we were not, you know, you hear people like, well, yeah, but, you know, if you take the quarterback in the first round, you blow it, you screw up the franchise for 3 years. Well, that's only true if you're unwilling to admit that you made a mistake and then go find the next guy. So we just viewed it as making another pick that, if right, provided a much, much higher upside than any other pick we could possibly make.
You know, when all this stuff happened, I believe you were working for ESPN, so you're obviously around people. You were talking about the draft all the time. You were talking about Wentz. And how many questions do you think people had, and you got to roll the dice, that people had about Wentz coming from a small school?
You know, listen, I'm going to answer that with two parts. In general, a pretty sizable number, just because it's unknown and it doesn't really have a historical, especially to the level he's playing right now, kind of comp that gives you some comfort. But I have a fairly modest, maybe six or eight guys in the league that I know really well, that I really trust, you know, their evaluation skills and their understanding about how to put together a team versus just pick players. And that group, there was not unanimity, but very, very strong belief that Wentz was going to be a really outstanding quarterback.
So there were, so you talked to a lot of people that really had full confidence in him, and yet the, and let the Eagles got a break because, and somehow I think they kind of knew because they have the same agent, that they got a break, although Goff's playing well, I think Wentz is a better quarterback. They got a break that the Rams took Goff and they could have Wentz.
Yeah, I listen. I think they had a decent indication that that's how it was going to go, but you in the league, you know, there's so many people that play games with each other, even friends sometimes, because your agenda is your own team, and the emotional price of doing well or not is so high. But I think the Eagles liked Goff well. I do think they liked Wentz better. I think that turned out exactly as they hoped it would. And I think they did luck out in a sense. I think Goff is going to turn out to be a good quarterback. I think Wentz is going to be, you know, amongst the top quarterbacks, you know, we've seen in certainly a long, long time, if not ever. So the fact that they could get him a two without having to get to one is obviously an element of luck in that.
You obviously have watched him play. I've been around him, so I see how he works, how he just doesn't let things overwhelm him. Your thoughts while you watch Wentz from last year to this year?
Well, you're seeing what I think you would expect to, because this is how we defined it then, and I know that they similarly think of it these days. The great quarterbacks have two things. It's not a massive, complicated list. I mean, there's sort of a third thing. They got to have a minimum threshold they have to hit on arm strength. But just to hit that threshold, and then arm strength does not matter. It's really a basket of what I call intangibles: leadership, work ethic, you know, drive to be great, competitiveness. You know, there's an obvious basket that almost any fan who watches football would easily identify, although many quarterback picks overlook this. And then the second part is just this athletic accuracy, instinct, whatever you want to call it, on the field, to have a sense of what's going on. You know, you see it, you know, it's the Larry Birds, it's the, you know, Michael Jordans. In every sport, there's a few of these guys that they just seem to have a feel for what's going on like nobody else does. So Peyton Manning has that, Tom Brady has that, Joe Montana had that. And I thought we saw that very early on. I mean, how do you play missing the preseason from game one and actually look? I don't care how much the coach shrinks the offense. You actually look like you know what you're doing, because the coach can shrink the offense all you want. You still don't know what the other team's going to do. So I think it was predictable that we'd see a big jump. Now, it's been even bigger than I would have thought, or I think anybody thought, which is just great for thinking about what the future could be. But he had that whole package of intangibles that makes the difference between the quarterbacks that are just strong-armed guys that could do it and the guys that actually become the very, very best in the business.
You know, Joe, when you, you know, it's kind of interesting when you look at this, and I've just heard a lot of the things you've said, and you use the word great when you talk about Carson Wentz. You put names in the conversation. Do you think he eventually, and again, it's all looking forward, eventually can be one of the really great quarterbacks in the NFL?
If there was a bet you could place on somebody in the future being a Hall of Fame player, I would bet on him. I really think he's that good, because he has got the key things at A-plus levels, and I don't see anything other than health that should keep him from being in that group. I mean, what separates Brady from the other quarterbacks? He's extraordinarily A-plus in all the intangible group, and he's got a great instinct and accuracy with the football. You know, put Peyton Manning. Put the guys that you think are the truly great quarterbacks, not the very good quarterbacks, not the guys that have found a way to win a Super Bowl, but the guys that you put on your list of best quarterbacks ever. They're above and beyond in these couple of categories. I think he's proven he's above and beyond in those few categories.
All right, so how much do you think Andy Reid was good with quarterbacks? I think you believe that. I believe that. How much do you think Doug Peterson was important to Carson Wentz's development?
Well, here's my answer. Wentz would have been great with any coach, any place. He's even better and faster because of what Doug has done. Same with Donovan and Andy. And I think we'll hit even a higher mark than he would have otherwise. But I think he's special enough that wherever he would have been, we would have been talking about him in the elite group of quarterbacks in the league.
You know, you worked for the Cleveland Browns. What a mess that team is. How could they? He wasn't even one of the top 20 players was, I guess, Hugh Jackson's comment. And they didn't deem him. I mean, they just passed on so many quarterbacks. How ridiculously foolish were they and their evaluation process when it came to basically giving the Eagles a long, long future and a possible Super Bowl team by trading that pick for Carson, which was Carson Wentz?
Well, it's really unimaginable, isn't it? I mean, at that point, they needed a quarterback literally for 20 years. Now, you know, we're blowing through the 20-year mark. And you got a guy sitting there with all those abilities. Now, okay, decide to pick him or not. Have a philosophy that all these picks can make up for it. You'll find a quarterback later, whatever it be. But they actually publicly told us, as you said, they didn't even think he wasn't a top 20 pick in the draft. They said he wouldn't even be a top 20 pick in the NFL. That's not like missing an evaluation by a bit or overvaluing, you know, that he didn't go to a big school or something. That is as bad and miss an evaluation as you'll ever hear about. I mean, take a guy that I'm telling you I think will end his career as a Hall of Fame quarterback and not even think in that moment in time he's top 20 in the league. You can't miss by any more than that, can you? I mean, that's about as far from right as you can get.
And they've traded away picks which could have gotten them other quarterbacks. But the and obviously you know the owner because you worked for him as their, what were you, the CEO of the Cleveland Browns. And you see what they've done now. How do you not get, and you were into, obviously, you know, the business of the front office. How do you not get paperwork in to make a trade, which they were trying to, and I don't even know that the quarterback they were going to trade for is that good. But whatever it was, how do you miss a timeline to get paperwork? How bad does an organization have to be?
Well, it's very hard to understand because it would be hard to overemphasize how simple the NFL has made the process of documenting a trade, especially over time there's some additional paperwork, but in the moment that you make the trade, to make it official, to go public with it, to have the players actually come and if necessary get physicals. I mean, there's literally a pre-filled out form with a couple of boxes. And the couple of boxes, by the way, just say things like, here's what we're giving up. Here's what we're getting. You know, here's the date. I mean, there's no tough questions on it. So, you know, and Sashi Brown, I know some people have questioned him as the right person making the final football decisions. But as somebody who's been involved in football administration, salary cap management, contract negotiations, and filing paperwork, he's got 15 years of respected experience in the league. So, I mean, we'll never know what really happened there, but it really is such a simple process. No one believed it could get it messed up.
It's almost impossible not to win a game in the NFL, but they have a really good chance of doing it.
Now, we were having the same conversation last year. I mean, it's very, very hard to understand because, you know, as you say, I mean, the league is set up to drive towards parity. You know, we've seen so many times where any given day a good team has a bad game, vice versa. I mean, it really is hard to not kind of even stumble. You know, I mean, there were plenty of years where the first pick in the draft was a team that won three or four games. I don't think that we've had a team other than through trade in a long time, decades, that had the first pick in the draft on their own 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no minimizing the opportunity lost, so to speak.
All right, back to the head coach. In this town, and you've been here for you were here for quite a while. You know the nonsense that goes on in the public. You know the criticism that goes on sports talk radio. You understand it all. But the bullet that was fired is the most asinine thing I've ever heard. When Mike Lombardi says that Doug Peterson is the least qualified head coach that he's seen in 30 years in the NFL. How can you make a comment so stupid when you see some of the other guys, whether you like Doug or not? The comment is just asinine. How can he make a comment like that?
Well, he's obviously got some other agenda, some other personal feelings, some, you know, listen, he's been in the business a long time. It's just not wise to go that far out on the limb, even if you believe that. But keep in mind, we're talking about a guy that played in the league for many years. Everybody respected as a really smart person, a really high character person. He trained under people that are very, very highly respected. He had a reasonable amount of experience. He wasn't the most experienced guy to become head coach, but he wasn't the least. So remember, his comment was about being the least qualified. I mean, that I don't know how you get there. Now, listen, when Doug was hired, there were a lot of people that thought it could go either way. But to get to the point where you're actually making a comment like he's the least qualified, yeah, I just don't know where you come from that or what else you've got going on in your mind or what agenda or personal experiences you may have. Where you make a comment that's that extreme. And, you know, listen, part of the joy, I'm sure they'll deny it, and it's not high up on the list of joys for Doug and his staff is proving how wrong that is. By the way, go back to what I said earlier. Head coach doesn't do anything more important than hire a staff. And I don't know how anybody who knew the game could have looked at that staff he hired and not felt like, wow, he hired one heck of a staff here. So, you know, that by itself to me, before they even started playing games, refuted the degree of the comments that Mike made,
and he won't back off of that, which is truly amazing. Now I'm wondering. I don't think he likes Andy Reid, but he couldn't criticize him at the time because Andy was winning. But so my question is, when he was with the Eagles and you were with the Eagles, was Andy a part of firing Mike Lombardi?
Yeah, well, part of. I mean, when Andy came on, we had really, at that point, hired Mo Drack the year earlier, you know, put him in the lead position, the personnel area, with the intent that, you know, once we got the right head coach, and then we were going to kind of reevaluate both the structure and the names that were kind of filling in the blanks. So at that point, Andy was there, and Mo Drack was there as well, and a number of other people, myself, Jeff, who participated in the discussion. So certainly Andy was a part of that discussion. I don't think singled him out in any way where Mike would have any kind of justification to have any vendetta against him. But yes, he was, I was, and there was a group of probably five or six of us that all participated in that conversation.
Hey, Joe, I'll admit a mistake, which Mike Lombardi won't. We all make mistakes. I've over-evaluated the football intellect of Mike Lombardi. How does he get such respect when we both know a lot of the things that have happened haven't been good yet? You know, the story changes later in years of what did happen. How do people miss on Mike Lombardi?
Well, I'll make a more blanket statement. I mean, there are too many people who are pundits. And I see this as much in the news as I do in sports, where their ability to say something with really strong conviction and they're sounding like they know what they're doing leads them to have kind of more respect and influence that they do. So I'm not singling Mike out in that comment. I think it's one of the flaws in kind of the media that we watch and how people end up with misperceptions about a lot of things. I mean, I see people on the air. I've worked with people that I thought were really good and really insightful and could have worked on a team and done a heck of a job. And I've worked with people where I'm looking around going, geez, what is it other than maybe the resume? And yes, they look good on TV. They present well. But in terms of their expertise, why are they still considered, you know, experts?
You know, he takes credit for you, Douglas, but I don't think he was really part of that or on board with that decision, was he, when you, Douglas, was traded for and came to the Eagles?
Well, Mike was there at the time, but no, Mike was not the leader of the effort to get Hugh Douglas or some of the other things that happened at the time frame. But, you know, I'm reluctant to dissect every single move, and I'm not even sure of every single thing he's – I don't track him well enough to know what exactly are the things he's taken credit for or more interestingly, if there are any things that he's taken the blame for.
All right, so now we get to you after your football life. It looked like, and I thought you did a good job, it looked like you enjoyed doing the things you did for ESPN. How much did you enjoy it, and how much fun was it?
Well, you know, for me, it was perfect. I mean, the headline is I enjoyed it a lot. I was at the point where I did not want to take on another major stressful challenge, whether it was in football or otherwise. At the same time, I love the game. I'm fascinated by the game. I love the debates around the game. And I knew a number of people at ESPN, so I knew there were people there that I really enjoy working with. So it fit perfectly. You know, I had the 3 months off in the summer, and I worked every other week the rest of the year. So it fit really well with my life, and I enjoyed the ability to stay involved with football and work with people that I really liked. So it was a good experience.
Yeah, and obviously you had perspective from both the player side and the front office business side. And how much did that help you in what you had to do for ESPN, and how much did they use both of those things with you?
Well, you know, I don't know anybody in these fields that doesn't always feel like they could be used even more. You know, I think my expertise around, you know, things like the cap and cap management, having been part of the last CBA negotiations, I was literally there when they negotiated all these rules that, you know, have ended up with all these controversies around, you know, player discipline and stuff like that. So I was in the room. I heard the pros and the cons and the debate and the intensity of part of those discussions. You know, I spent a lot of time that I think was very valuable to the Eagles at the time, and I think they've continued some of it, studying success. You know, who was being successful and why? What were the commonalities? And frankly, what were the differences? What was the conventional wisdom that everybody was following just because they had been taught that by somebody they learned from, not because it was the best way to do things? I think I added a lot, you know, in those kind of areas. And I think ESPN took a moderate advantage of some of the areas, but, you know, they're filling me into existing programming. It wasn't like I had my own show. But I think fans are a lot more interested in the, not necessarily the cap part of things, but the building of a team and how you go about it. And many of the teams that failed, they just don't understand. There is a difference between just drafting good players and signing good free agents and actually building a team with the right pieces to fit together to win. You know, I had a debate with somebody about the Eagles before the season, and I thought they were going to be better than this other person, and he pointed out their weaknesses. I said to him, you know what? I agree with you on all the weaknesses you're pointing out, but you go back and look at teams, even the ones that have won Super Bowls, they all have some weaknesses. So the fact that you're accurately pointing out some concerns about the roster does not prove that they're not going to be, you know, that good this year. I think too many people make the mistake of looking at the holes and forgetting, if you look back at the team that, you know, wins the Super Bowl at the end of the season, you know, they probably had some holes too. I've never seen a team that didn't at least have some weaknesses. Now, you can't have a glaring weakness. The players are too good and the coaches are too smart. I don't care what position it is. If you've got a bad player at any position, that will get exploited and you got a problem.
Joe,
if you get at least solid players, then you can overcome that.
The quality throughout the NFL is not as good as it used to be. I don't know how many years you have to go back to say it was that much better. But why is the quality not as good with more teams in the NFL?
Well, hard to say. I mean, listen, as you get more teams, everything gets diluted a little bit. So, you know, in my mind, first and foremost, coaching. I mean, at all levels, not just the head coach, but all the position coaches. And then, you know, all the players. I do think we're starting to see the beginnings of the repercussions of, you know, superstar athletes who are sophomores, juniors, seniors in high school starting to pick, you know, and this has been going on forever, but I think slanted now in the wrong direction. Do I play baseball or do I play football? You know, we've had examples of this for a long time. I don't know if you remember, Notre Dame had a wide receiver, Zamarjian,
yep,
who everybody in the NFL thought would be a first-round draft pick and be a superstar wide receiver. Now, he was one of the first people I ever remember who was also, everybody thought, could be a great baseball player. He chose baseball. We have a lot of players, people that none of us have ever heard of, that are superstar athletes as sophomores and juniors in high school and have to pick a sport. And I think we're starting to see the signs that some more of those are starting to pick sports that feel safer. And we got to get this technology that people are working on behind the scenes and starting to show up a little bit, advance really, really quickly. Or I think football's going to pay a big price in terms of the quality of the game in the future.
All right. The Eagles can go how far this year?
The Eagles could win the Super Bowl. Absolutely no question about it. I mean, will they? You know, there's just so many little things that can change that being a yes or a no. It's almost impossible to predict. But I can't imagine who they play today that you wouldn't either have them as the favorite or a virtual wash. There's nobody they would line up against right now where I could think people would expect the other team to win with any confidence. You could say, hey, it could go either way. But they're as good as team in the league, and they're playing better right now, and they seem to be getting better to me as the year goes on. Those are all the things you see in teams that get to and win the Super Bowl. So nobody's kidding themselves if they think the Eagles have a real chance to win this year's Super Bowl. There's no question they do.
And the head coach, I mean, I'm around Doug. I see the way the players respect him, and obviously Chip Kelly, it didn't work out. Everybody was wrong about him as a pro coach. But Doug just seems he can connect with the players, but he can also get the players to do what he has to do. How difficult is that for Doug, for any head coach, but Doug Peterson, to get everybody, having everybody's back and being on the same page?
Well, extremely difficult. It's what separates the really good coaches from the bad coaches. Or I should say the coaches that really succeed from the ones that don't. This is, you know, people got to think about this. There's no other field with the diversity of people in your building, from their backgrounds to the geography to their religions to their personal agendas versus their collective agendas to things their families and their agents have in the air. I can't think of another profession where the need to find a way to bring them all together and unselfishly focus on one particular goal and then everything they do is driven towards that. It takes an incredible skill. Some guys do that by, you know, a Belichick who just overwhelms you with his emotion, his intensity. That's not Doug. So he has to have a different way of doing it. And it's about, you know, mutual respect and trust and like and passion. And there are a far smaller number of head coaches that have succeeded big with Doug's persona versus, you know, the Belichicks and the Parcells and the Gibbses and the, you know, that whole group of guys. So this is, if you don't do this, you don't get to where he's at. If you're not doing this well, I don't care how much talent you have. You'll still do pretty well if you get enough talent. But you're not sitting there on this kind of a record and win streak and momentum and just intensity of performance week after week. You don't see this. Who performs at this high level every week? And by the way, they'll eventually have a bad game, and people shouldn't get crazy about it. They're going to have a bad game just like everybody does. But the area you're talking about is the least covered, and from inside a building, the most important thing a head coach does.
Yeah, and when you think about all the coaches that were hired when Doug was hired, they wanted Adam Gase. They tried to get Ben McAdoo. And you can go down the list. It's just unbelievable how he's at that year. He's at the head of the class of the coaches that were hired. You think about all the complaining that went on, and then you look at the other coaches. I guess you're not amazed with that, though.
Well, I'm amazed by, listen, Dan Quinn did it last year. And Dan's a friend, and I'm proud that I was part of the Arthur Blank brought me in to help with that search and got Dan hired. The list of coaches, I don't care who you are, that have teams that are either in, as Atlanta was last year, and I think the Eagles have a real good chance to be this year in the Super Bowl, and a head coach's second year. I mean, you know, you're changing systems. So, you know, you need different things from players. You've got different personalities. You've got a different culture you're trying to create. That's an incredible accomplishment. I mean, to be dominating the NFC, which is what they're doing right now. They're not just leading. They don't just have the best record. They're dominating the NFC. I mean, I think what he's doing is phenomenal. I mean, and by the way, I'm sure that even the people that when they were hired didn't have any question about it. He's exceeding their expectations because this just doesn't happen.
Joe, you're on Twitter. The tweets are actually and I'm following him. You have some very insightful tweets. How much do you enjoy, and it's JoeBanner13, right, is your Twitter handle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much do you enjoy that now that you can relax and not be have the everyday pressures of a football team?
Well, there's a lot of freedom in not caring what anybody thinks about what you say. And, you know, they're varying degrees. I was never somebody that was overly affected by that, but, you know, it's hard to not be affected by it at all, especially if you got a wife and kids and everything. So there's great joy and freedom in being able to say whatever you want and hit send and not worry, you know, what anybody reacts to it, whether it's good or bad. And, you know, listen, I still like having a little bit of a voice. I'm not looking to run a team. I'm not looking to have a big media presence, but it's nice to have a venue from which you can actually, you know, throw out your opinions and, you know, hopefully sometimes at least add to the dialogue a little bit.
Joe, I have to admit, it's always fun talking to you. And I've always believed you're very insightful and very insightful in talking to you today. Well, I know we'll do this again and we'll stay in touch. Joe, I really, really do appreciate and good luck. And if you say something on Twitter that I don't like, I'll let you know about it.
Well, I have no doubt about that. I appreciate it. Enjoy being on with you as well.
Thanks, Joe. Take care. How about that? Carson Wentz, he thinks, will be a Hall of Fame quarterback. You know, with the progression he's made, when you look at it now, that's a big leap in only his second year. But I don't disagree. He's got that ability. He's got that work ethic. He's got the way that he handles things. It's just fascinating. You know, I'm in practice almost every day. Obviously, I watch the team. And I see what they do. I see the way he reacts when I'm as the sideline reporter for our broadcast with Merrill Reese and Mike Quick. This guy is really something special, and he's got all those things that you need to be there. What he thinks about Doug Peterson, I think he showed a tremendous amount of respect, and he should. And that was the things that came out in what Joe said. Talked about, you know, the way the NFL is moving, and the Cleveland Browns were a joke, and he pointed out how much of a joke the Cleveland Browns are and where he thinks the Eagles can go. So fascinating in the things that Joe discussed. Also, and just to touch on a few other things, Ben Simmons was shown, obviously recently, that he's going to have to learn how to shoot foul shots. I don't know what it's going to take. He's been playing basketball all his life. He's been on the foul line before. And Scott Brooks, to his credit, when people whine and complain, oh, they got to change the rules. No, you don't have to change the rules. They've already changed them. You can't do that in the last 2 minutes of a quarter because the team can put anybody they want on the foul line. So they've taken part of that away. You can't change the game because some players can't play all the facets of the game well. You can't do that. What are you going to just put somebody else on the foul line when he gets? I don't care where you foul him. He has got to. You have an opportunity to seal the game away if he makes foul shots. So it's his responsibility, as great a player as we see that Ben Simmons is going to be. He won't reach that greatness unless he can shoot foul shots. Because in big games, when you get down to big games, when it becomes important for the 76ers at the end of the season or in the playoffs, teams are just going to foul him. And until he learns how to shoot foul shots, it's not going to stop. It's not. Scott Brooks was the first coach that did this. He played within the rules. And I don't want to hear all this whining. Well, they should change the rule. Well, they didn't change the rule with the draft when the Sixers purposely tried to lose for 3.5 years, purposely. So you like that part of the rule that you could lose on purpose to get better draft picks or get good draft picks, but now you don't like the rule. Now, you can't make the rules as you go. You've got to play by the rules, and I think they've tinkered and changed too many rules in professional sports, and I think that really is a problem. Ben Simmons, if you're going to be great, you need to be able to at least make 65 to 70% of the foul shots, not 50%. You've got to learn. If I'm Ben Simmons, every day after practice, I shoot 100 foul shots. Now, I don't know that he does that. I don't think he does that. He has got to make foul shots. Forget about all this nonsense and Jimmy Lynam. Oh, you can't do that. It's making a farce of the game. Well, it is, but it wouldn't make it a farce if he just learned how to shoot foul shots. All right, Sixers are good. We know they're good. Hey, listen, I predicted 53 wins. They still have a chance to do that. Almost on pace for that. But they've got to get Joel Embiid has got to play more games. This can't play back-to-back. He's got to stop that. Maybe by next year there's an indication that maybe that won't happen. But whatever the case may be, two things. Ben Simmons has got to be able to shoot fouls much better. Much better is not saying a lot because he's only at 50%. And Joel Embiid has got to be able to play back-to-back games when they're important games. All right, thanks for joining us on the Howard Eskin podcast. A lot more good people to come. I've got a list of names that you're going to enjoy. And again, I thought Joe Banner really was very insightful. I enjoy talking to Joe Banner, regardless of what you may have thought of him at times. I really enjoy talking to Joe, and he's really football savvy and smart. That's my opinion. That's my opinion, and that's my final answer. All right, thanks for joining us on the Howard Eskin podcast, always available on iTunes, and have some great days. And the Eagles, yes, I believe, are certainly good. They're the best team in football. I believe, there's no question in my mind, that they are going to the Super Bowl. Thanks for joining us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.